No, September. Sorry. The September Development Committee meeting to order. With that, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. First presentation, historic asset inventory, Sylvia.
Good afternoon, I'm Sylvia Bachner, Community Development.
Do you have the mic on?
Oh, is it on?
There you go.
So the last time I presented to this group about the historic asset inventory, I believe, was back in the spring. They've been working as a group since September. This group includes members of our Historic Preservation Commission, along with representatives from both of our local nonprofits. The goal of this group is to identify proactive strategies to preserve historic properties. They use a list that was developed in 2017 as a starting point, and then expanded on that to list all of the historic assets that they can think of. So the product that they came up with was a list that includes over 500 properties and several neighborhoods. From this list, the group has narrowed down to 8 focus properties for 2019. So these are the ones that they will focus their efforts on and actually apply those proactive strategies this year. So each property has an identified member of the group who will be kind of taking the lead on that property, and they've also identified which proactive strategy they think would be appropriate. So I'll just quickly go through the focus properties for this year. So the first one's kind of a grouping because these 4 properties are right on the same street together. So this is 2nd Ave Southeast, just east of PCI. The strategy that they've identified for these is adaptive reuse and potentially local landmarking, and Bob Rafton with Friends of Cedar Rapids Historic Preservation is taking the lead on that one. This is the Czech School, so just outside Nubo, I guess within Nubo, on 2nd Street Southeast. The strategy for this one is outreach to the property owner and potentially adaptive reuse. And Cindy Haddish, who's with Save Sierra Heritage, is working on that one. This is the Meskwaki Block, or the former Dragon Chinese Restaurant building. This is one that they think adaptive reuse would be appropriate for, and Mark Stoker Hunter, who works with Friends of Cedar Rapids Historic Preservation, is working on this one. This building, this is an older photo. This is on 1st Ave, I think the same block as the Hy-Vee. And this was the office of Dr. Byron McKeeby, who is the model for Grantwood's American Gothic. So while it may not look immediately historic, that's the history behind it. So this is one that they're looking to outreach or adaptive reuse, and Ron Moosman with HPC is taking the lead on that one. This is the Lossinger Block in Nubo, Little Bohemia. This is another one where outreach is the main strategy, and Cindy Haddish and Jay Valvero with Save Sierra Heritage are taking the lead. This one is in the Honor Row area on 8th Street Southeast, and this is another one where outreach is going to be the main focus. And Amanda McKnight, Grafton with Friends, is taking the lead on that one. CSPS Hall in Nubo, of course, and this one is already on the National Register. The strategies here are, again, outreach and potentially local landmarking. And Jay Valvero with Save Sierra Heritage and Ron Lauer with HBC be taking the lead on that one. And then their last focus property this year is the Mother Mosque on the northwest side. This is another one that outreach and potentially local landmarking are the identified strategies, and Ron Lauer with HBC has been working on this. So the next steps are for the members of this group to reach out to the property owners, provide them information on what they're doing and some background on the history of their properties. And then, depending on what the property owner, how they react to that, kind of start working towards some of those proactive strategies. So the image here shows a part of a brochure that we've put together for the the group to hand out to property owners to talk about some of these different strategies and options that are available. And then this group is going to continue to meet twice a year to share updates, make any updates to the larger list, and just keep each other informed. So that's all I have for you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Thank you, Sylvia. Marty? Ashley? Sylvia, I've been asking for this list, I think, for the last 4 or 5 years, actually. And so I'm really, really excited to see that HPC and the nonprofit organizations have worked together on this list. And with 500 properties, getting it down to 8 is a really good start. So I'm really thrilled that we didn't try and bite off too much here and that we're taking those 8 properties and focusing on those. In terms of outreach or adaptive reuse, I'm looking at the one, for example, at 8th Street, 309 8th Street. It just says outreach. Also, the Lessinger block at 3rd Street, that says outreach. So will it be, once they've met with the property owner, will they then determine what the next step might be? I'm assuming that would be part of the process, whether they could go to local landmarking. That would be my hope, is that the majority of these property owners understand the importance of preserving their properties by going with local landmarking. So is that the ultimate goal? Or?
So the goal is just for the group to get a better understanding of what the property owner is planning for these properties, and also just to provide them with some education on the historic value and also the potential options. So. Yeah, local landmarking is definitely an option they could look at, but since in these situations the group didn't know much about what the property owner was thinking, outreach is the first step to see what might come next.
Right. So the brochure that's been put together, will you please see that all of council gets one of those brochures in their boxes?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we'd really appreciate a follow-up and get some feedback on how that outreach has gone with some of the property owners.
Sure.
Great.
Thanks.
Good. Thank you. Good job. Please pass on our thanks to HPC, Friends, and SafeCR.
Appreciate
it working together. Thank you. Next, we've got some recommendation items. Council Well-Being Advisory Committee work plan. Stephanie? Vera?
Hi, I'm Stephanie Schrader with Community Development. The Well-Being Advisory Committee was established in 2016 to support the ongoing work of creating a healthy community and assist the Cedar Rapids City Council with matters related to well-being. They are required in their bylaws to develop an annual work plan, and the committee is a 9-member committee. Their work plan goals for the 2019-2020 work plan are increased access to and consumption of healthy foods, increased social connectedness, support increased access and utilization of places for physical activity, high resident satisfaction, and improved health indicators and decrease in chronic disease indicators. Some of their accomplishments for the past work plan year were successfully advocating for adoption of a smoke-free playground ordinance that council voted on, and it was adopted on January 1st of this year. Support worksite wellness initiatives and a worksite summit for Linn County, supporting social connectedness events, supporting the pedestrian master plan through implementation of 4 separate walk audits. They championed for sun safety at the farm at Beaver Park, and they brought together community stakeholders to identify barriers and gaps and support what's already in place. And that feedback was used to develop the work plan. The next steps, the Well-Being Advisory Committee recommended approval of the work plan they developed at their July 10th meeting. And now we're here before you for recommendation, and it's set to go before City Council at next week's meeting. Are there any questions?
Thank you. Ashley? Back to you.
Do you know where we're at as far as the implementation of the pedestrian master plan? Because you know that when we went through this budget cycle, we didn't have any money to fund it. And I mean, that is one of the things that I see as kind of our biggest opportunities here is that connectivity. I always revert back to just for how long this happened and seeing everybody almost from the enough cars per person. And so there's always people who are struggling to commute from one place to another. And so I know that that's one thing that I'd really like to see. But another thing that I've talked with Jeff Pomerantz about is even having our city resources. So for example, at the DoubleTree, there's always meals, and we've all been to events where there's always meals that are left off the table, and I want those to practically be kind of like a phone tree where they're sent out to some of our communities. Little state meeting, et cetera. There's a lot of different food pantries and stuff like that, but I haven't heard an update on where we're at with that.
The first part of your question is the pedestrian master plan, and I believe that is the draft is up for public comment. The final draft is up for public comment.
It is, and staff did. I knew it just got presented. I can't remember where. It was at the infrastructure committee meeting, the last one, so still getting comment, and it'll come to City Council for approval.
And then the second part of your question, I think you'll be happy to hear. I am actually part of a committee who is looking at, trying to think of the right word, but looking at food waste in the county. We know that there's, I think it's approximately 20% of the waste in the landfill is food. And what's more, so that's not very sustainable, but what's more is, getting this good food redirected to people who can use it. So that is something that is being addressed, not necessarily by the Wellbeing Advisory Committee so much, but that is work that's being done.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just to follow up on Ashley's question, so are you working in concert with Lynn County Public Health on that particular piece? I would think that
yes.
If the food is prepared, there would be some discussion surrounding how you get it to
exactly
to those people within a timely, within an appropriate time frame.
So you nailed it. Yeah, there are some barriers with processed food versus packaged food, and that's being talked about.
So there is a collaboration between Lincoln. Okay.
Absolutely.
And then the other question I have, when I'm looking at tactics and implementation strategy, community gardens, edible landscaping, and orchards, that's always been high on my list to get a true community garden where volunteers utilize their time by planting and weeding and taking care of, tending and harvesting, and then getting that fresh food into food pantries. And so have we gone as far as to identify any kind of city properties that might be appropriate for that kind of community garden?
Actually, yes. About a year and a half ago, Lynn County Public Health had an intern who also worked a little bit with me, and she did identify properties that could be feasible around the area for community gardens. And as a result of her efforts, the Wellbeing Advisory Committee reached out with letters of support to the organizations that owned those properties, encouraging them to consider establishing a community garden. And then we provided them with resources and connections.
Well, going beyond that, I'd really like to see the city, perhaps working with Scott and Parks and Rec, take a lead on establishing a community garden. And, you know, part of it is not just the property, but once you have this produce, then you have to process it. You you have to clean it, you have to, you know, get it ready to pass on to those food banks. And so finding, you know, how we could do that with a partner that would help prepare the food, you know, refrigerated before it gets to whatever it takes, you know, whether it's apples or vegetables or whatever. But there's a lot, obviously, that goes into this. There are some really great models out there with Cincinnati and Cleveland, Ohio, that have done a really great job with volunteers and community gardens and processing the food and getting it where it needs to go. And I'd encourage your committee to please take a look at those programs and see what we could do to model after those.
Okay. Eric, yes, I will bring your recommendation to them. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your help. Okay, moving on. Next is Sarah. You're up with first-time home buyer program and home funding requirements.
She needed a recommendation.
Yeah. Oh, we did, didn't we? I'm sorry. Stephanie, we're sorry. Okay, may I have a motion to move that on, please?
Motion to present to council.
Thank you. That's our second.
Sorry.
All those in favor? Aye. Thank you. Sorry. Okay, now you're up, Sarah.
Okay. Thank you. Sarah Buck and Jennifer Martin with Community Development. So today we're here to talk about first-time home buyer updates and the home program updates. So typically this comes through, you see it on an annual basis through our action plan. However, we did receive some additional guidance from HUD after that action plan came before council in April. So now we're bringing back those changes based on the recommendation from the guidelines from HUD, as well as some other challenges that we've had locally. And so I'm going to let Jennifer talk about some of those initiatives here, the proposed changes.
Hi there. The first thing that we want to change is removing our local purchase price limit. For a number of years, we've had a local cap of $135,000 as a purchase price. And with new underwriting requirements that we're required to do on our buyers, as well as the existing home program cap, we've decided that our local limit is not actually doing what we wanted it to do in the first place, and it has a disparate impact on larger families that can't find a house that fits their household and be under that purchase price limit. That home program amount is updated every year, and I believe right now it's $164,000, and it's 95% of the area median sales price. The second thing that we're looking to change is changing the start date. We have typically opened in the fall with the typical funding round. We're hoping to move to spring for two reasons. One, to be in line with the market. It tends to get pretty busy in the springtime. And we have an issue with winter conditions if we have any exterior work that's required on the house. And during the winter, those repairs are not able to be made, but they're required in order for us to fund. So during the winter, we have a hard time actually assisting people. So starting in the spring allows us to start without having to worry about that winter condition issue and be in line with people who are ready to buy. And the last item is a pretty big request or a change for us. It would be increasing the amount of assistance each buyer is eligible for. New guidance has been issued that changes the focus of the program from a down payment gap assistance to truly working on keeping the long-term affordability of the home, buying down the mortgage price. And also locally, with some of the administration and the requirements of the program, the current $5,000 amount hasn't been as attractive to buyers, and it's pretty easy to walk away from that amount of money. So we are looking to increase it to $14,999. And that is the cutoff on the HUD program of where they would go from a 5-year term to a 10-year term.
So yes, essentially we'll be serving less people overall because we will be increasing that dollar amount. But again, this is based on HUD's guidance, trying to stay in line with the guidance that HUD is providing for the program. I think a lot of communities have gotten rid of this type of program just because of all of the underwriting requirements, all the additional work that has to be done, but we feel that by increasing that dollar amount, we can keep the program, still stay within regulation, and really assist, even though we're assisting less people, we will assist the purchasers more by really buying down that mortgage and providing more of a benefit. So the timeline, our public comment period ends on September 23rd, and then this will come before City Council in a public hearing on the 25th. Open any questions you may have.
Thank you. Okay, Ashley, coming to you first.
I just appreciate your efforts on this. I know that it can be difficult, particularly with that down payment assistance, without it, to try and, as a first-time homebuyer, to try and qualify for a home. So I appreciate that we're investigating increasing the cap. I mean, the reality is some people may only still want, you know, a certain portion, so it may just help more people who need even more help. I also just wanted to publicly thank the housing team for their work. I believe this was in August yet, where you all took the initiative to apply for the Department of Housing and Urban Development availability of the residual program funds, achieving an additional $71,000 for Section 8 housing voucher dollars. So I just appreciate the efforts that y'all have been doing to try and keep people home to your Cedar Rapids. So thank you.
Thank you.
The only question I have is, on this program, can you leverage other programs? I know a couple months ago we talked about like the historic renovation dollars. Can you combine the two programs together?
We've definitely worked with other programs. Essentially, any other funds that come in, as long as they are still essentially needing our money in order to purchase that house, we're able to assist. So we work with the IFA. Down payment assistance. We've had people with Federal Home Loan Bank and the veteran, the military down payment as well. So as long as it works within that particular person's needs.
In neighborhood finance?
Yes.
Okay. Cool. Yes. Thanks.
I don't have any questions. Jennifer, thank you. Nice job presenting. And thank you.
Thank you.
We would entertain a recommendation, please.
Motion to move this on to council.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now we'll move on to some updates. I'm always excited to hear about these corridor action plans. So we've got Seth and Doug with us today. So welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Seth Garrison, Community Development. So I'm going to give an update on kind of where we are with the beginning phases of doing a corridor action plan for the South 6th Street Southwest corridor. And then Doug's also here just to, if you have any questions about the two paving for progress projects, which are kind of related to this. So 6th Street Southwest area was identified in Vision COR as a priority road for a corridor action plan. The area we're looking at is the extent of 6th Street from 1st Avenue down to Highway 30. This coordinates with the Paving for Progress project, which will repair and rehabilitate the road between Wilson and 33rd, and also include additional sidewalks, bus stops, pedestrian accommodations, and convert the road from 43 lanes. So there's an aerial showing the area we're looking at. So corridor action plans, really what we're looking at now is looking at things such as land use, streetscaping, placemaking. At this point in the project, we're really trying to hear from the stakeholders within the area, residents and business owners, what issues or what vision they might have for the area. We have an online survey that's up on the city's website that accompanied our first public input session, which occurred on August 7th, that followed an open house for the road project. At that open house, we asked those who attended for feedback on strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats or challenges within the corridor. And we plan to do further stakeholder outreach, trying to target some of the business interests and also reaching out to the Taylor Neighborhood Association and try and get, I guess, more input from different stakeholders along the corridor, since we understand that this is a pretty long stretch of road. We're looking to publish the results of the public input we've received the next month or two. We're hoping to have an open house later this fall to review some draft goals and action steps for the area, and that'll lead into a second open house this winter, with the plan being adopted early next year. Just give a brief update on the connection.
Thank you. Doug Wilson, Public Works. So we did a public meeting back in April on this project. What you see in front of you on the map is the aerial that was shown for that meeting. The improvements run from First Avenue to E Avenue, and then a follow-on project would be to replace the intersection at F Avenue. Also, if you're familiar with that, that's in pretty rough condition too. So we expect the Mid-American acquisition to be done in the first quarter of next year, and then we'll follow on with the demo and relocation of them. Funding-wise for this project, TIF is helping fund the relocation and the acquisition. State for Progress is focused solely on the roadway improvements. So we also have to do a 3-for-1 closing, crossing closure to get one back from the UP. We're working on that. We've identified two already. The I Avenue Northwest crossing over by Diamond V, that one's going to be closed already if you look at the master plan for the flood control system. So that one was pretty easy. We've looked at this BC connection, being that we're going to have a new crossing here. It's a short, we don't really inconvenience anybody on this side. It's a short run here. It's very easy to get over to A, so that looks like a pretty logical one. We haven't heard any negative feedback from the neighborhood on that. A third one, we're really trying to get credit for some of the crossings that went away when the spur that went to the Sinclair side on the southeast side, that was Union Pacific. We feel like, you know, they have three less crossings and four less crossings to maintain than they used to before. So we're trying to work with the railroad to get us some credit for that, because we're kind of really a lot of issues coming up with a third one to close that really doesn't kind of affect things in a bigger picture of the city, and working closely with our friends here at Community Development on that. We're coordinating with Transit. Transit's going to utilize about half of this lot in the long term for expansion. We will be demoing a small building over in this corner if you're familiar with their site. So they're going to rebuild a building in this area and utilize that. So we're working with that. We expect that to happen possibly late next year. We're in planning right now and design of the project. Property acquisition is ongoing. Other than the Mid-American site, we need a little bit of right away from the folks down here, so we're working with them, but otherwise a pretty clean project for acquisition. We expect the construction to begin in the spring of 2021 and be completed in the fall of 2022. Just a reminder, we do have MPO federal funds for this project. It's available in federal fiscal year 22, so that becomes available October 1st of 2021, so that's the two-year issue in there. We are looking at possibly other projects that we have funded through the MPO, if we could move it up a year, so we're trying to do that. But it may be just a two-year project overall to get everything done. We did add the piece from E Avenue to First Avenue. We did some cores of the mountain there, and it's basically very thin asphalt right on top of very poor soils, and we just don't think that road will hold up. So that's where we're at with the extension. As far as the 6th Street project from 33rd to Wilson Avenue, that project's still on schedule for next year to do an overlay, and then the following year to do sidewalks. We did look at converting that to a curb and gutter street, but if you look at the overall Pay for Progress program, when we looked at all the way from 33rd to 15th, that was about a $14 million project. So, we're going to get that road fixed between 33rd and Wilson, because it's in such poor condition. And then we'll take a look here in a few years maybe 10 years, have maybe some MPO funding to do the conversion. But as I look at the city as a whole, that's a lot of investment in that corridor. And as you well know, we have a lot of needs throughout the city for that paid for progress dollar. So any questions?
Thank you very much. Marty?
No, it's great to see this coming. We've been waiting for a long time, and I know it's been coming, so thank you.
I'm just excited about Sixth Street, mainly because a lot of this is in my district, but it's also just something that I've been watching, knowing that it needs some more TLC. My question, I have a few questions then. Can you tell me a little bit about that outreach that was done to solicit businesses up and down there or residents?
We used our standard outreach of social media, press releases. In the mailing for the Paper for Progress open house, all those people are told about the follow-on public open house for the 6th Street corridor. And we also sent flyers, these are interns, to post flyers at businesses and other public locations up and down the corridor. So, and I think based on that meeting, we understand that we need to continue working on that. And I think we're thinking of maybe doing a couple focus groups with landowners on both the north and south side of the corridor, and as I mentioned, doing outreach to the Taylor area neighborhood as well.
One of my biggest concerns particularly is 6th Street where it locks in with 33rd and intersects there. Mm-hmm. There are so many opportunities there to kind of reimagine that space, and in speaking with some of the hotel managers there, they were unaware of this. And so I think that's just one of my asks is if, particularly those where there are so many people coming and going who will get maybe a short impression or a first impression of Cedar Rapids, I just ask that we specifically target them because they're hearing from their guests and can get a lot of information about what is it like, particularly if you're investing in pedestrian walkways and everything like that. I would just like us to solicit and maybe glean some of that feedback that they get from their guests, because there's so many hotels there along 33rd that I just think that we would really do ourselves a disservice if we didn't specifically reach out to them and invite them to the conversation, because they are really excited to know that this is happening there. My other question is regarding bus stops. I had to take the bus when I was in middle school. I don't know if this was just like a punishment for my parents, because I refused to change schools when we moved across town. We were staying on the southwest side, but I was in Prairie's district technically, and refused to not go to Wilson and finish it out. So I had to take the city bus, and I remember all the changes and everything like that. And it's hard to watch people who are starting their day off standing in snow, because we don't have what I would deem as proper accommodations. They're just, as bus service has really become more predominant dependent, people are very dependent on it, it's hard to see them standing in the grass or finding places to stand. And so if we can make those covered shelters, I think, that's really what I would be asking for us to look and find those along the route, so people don't have to kind of huddle in the mud or in the snow during that. And then my other question really is about what is our expectation about, I am adamant that we need better pedestrian accommodations up and down Wilson and on 6th Street, mainly because of how many people are commuting by foot. However, what is our expectation for businesses that this directly impacts? Because I'm already getting solicited by businesses who I am under the assumption that they would have a profit margin that they can tap into to help accommodate this, just like any resident would have to maintain their sidewalk. And so when we're asking them this, I'm kind of surprised that I'm getting the feedback already of them saying like, yeah, but not us though, right? And my first impression is no, this is your role that you play as a business in our community. So I'm just wondering how we navigate that conversation.
I'll let Doug directly answer about what's planned, what's planned with the Wilson to 33rd project? I would say that, you know, in general, with any development, so if a property were redeveloped, the city's requirement is that you must have sidewalks in front of your property. There's some limited ability for deferral, but that would probably not really apply to most of this area. The issue you're talking about is one we've always run into, which is when we're going back and putting in a sidewalk. And, I'd say with the action plan, like I said, I'll hand over to Doug in a second. We'll talk about the bus stops and sidewalks for the corridor itself. And I think something we want to incorporate into the plan is a look at, okay, if we're, now that we're improving, especially that stretch between Wilson and 33rd, which is one of the more visible areas where we don't have pedestrian accommodations, and you do see people walking and biking, probably take a look at, well, okay, where are the connections from there with the side streets look like?
And certainly, I don't think it's any of our intention, as we're rolling out this pedestrian master plan, that we would want to bankrupt any business or anything like that. And certainly, there will be some smaller businesses that don't have as big of a profit margin to, you know, to pay for some of their portion of this. But I just appreciate your.
Yeah, the current policy that was passed by council, that was revised by council about 2 or 3 years ago, is the commercial properties, those like Gateway Gardens do, those apartment type complexes, they are assessed 50% of the cost of a 5-foot walk. And then these are going to be 6-foot walks, so the city picks up the extra foot. And then the other half, they do have an opportunity to pay that back over 10 years, and they will have to maintain the walk. In terms of the bus stations at Gateway Gardens, we are going to have a specific pull-off there where they get completely out of the lane. And so that will be a place. Also with this project, we'll have 8-foot shoulders throughout this corridor from 33rd to Wilson. So in those other bus stop areas, that snow should be pushed away. We've also looked at, obviously working with transit on maybe some more bus shelters. Part of a follow-up to the public meeting we had, going to put a camera out, kind of take a look at where people are walking from, a lot from the Hinsman Center. So we do have a crossing that we're going to put in that area, but we're also looking at realigning the Gateway Garden driveway with Martin and Star Equipment. They share a driveway right now. They don't share a driveway right now, but they were going to combine. And so there's some issues there, so we're trying to work through that. But we're definitely looking at pedestrian accommodations and bus accommodations with the project.
Well, just a couple of comments, and I've driven 6th Street quite a bit over the last couple of 2.5 years. 2 flat tires.
2.
I just going 2. It's really bad, so I'm really happy that we're going to focus on getting that repaved. But as I'm making that drive, I do see people walking on the shoulder in gravel, and that to me is just, you know, especially in the wintertime or when it's raining, it's just, so the sooner we can get the sidewalks in. You said it was, what, 2021?
Next year we'll do the asphalt and everything, so we'll have like 8-foot wide shoulders, so we won't have the gravel anymore, and then we're going to do a follow-on project to do the sidewalks. Once again, it's an acquisition timing type thing because we'll need a lot of temporary easements. Whereas just this asphalt overlay project, basically rehab of the street, we only need 4. So we can get out there, get the asphalt done, get the street smoother, get to a place out of the way to walk on nice pavement, and then follow up the following year with new sidewalks that are completely away from the pavement.
So the 6-foot sidewalks, eventually, will they go all the way up? Because in front of Hawkeye Downs, in front of Hawkeye Downs, we've got 6-foot sidewalks. I'm assuming that the trail will go up and then kind of do a loop eventually and come underneath the bridge, as I recall. And it isn't a part of a connector that goes down to Cedar Valley Trail, Cedar Valley Nature Trail.
Yeah, the trail connection eventually for Prairie Creek Trail. That's in the long term.
Right. And so the sidewalk then, that 6-foot sidewalk, would that be then considered part of that trail?
Generally, we don't consider the sidewalk part of the trail, but we will have bicycle accommodations probably throughout on street, and then the sidewalk would be where pedestrians can be outside.
So just for future thought, guys, the sidewalk from 33rd up and over the viaduct before you get to the new pavement in front of Pocket Downs, that is extremely narrow, and in some places I don't even think it exists. And so, it, you know, as we think about that connectivity to eventually that trailhead, I think, you know, you're going to want to pay attention to that connection too, and I'm sure you're already way ahead of me. So, at any rate, really happy to see this. It's great. Much needed. So, thanks a lot. Look forward to getting that done.
Thank you.
So the last update, Council, is the River Recreation Feasibility Study. And so...
No, you're good.
Okay.
Okay, Check Village New Bar, sorry. Thank you.
I can give the other one, I just wouldn't be any good.
Recreation Feasibility Study, can't wait.
Okay. So, good afternoon. I want to give you an update on the Check Village Nubo Area Action Plan. I'm going to fly through some of these first couple slides because I would expect you to memorize them already. The boundary. Why we're doing this, what are we focusing on? We do have an advisory group, and these are, again, representing the six different entities that are striving to improve the Check Nubo area. And although I did mention those other kind of general things we look at, sometimes when we're in an area, there's other things that we may be able to kind of place more emphasis on or other considerations. So just a reminder that there's a couple in this area. We've got looking at the 2015 Greenway Plan for Check Village. We've got gateway opportunities, and then with the Smokestack Bridge and other trail improvements, making sure that we've connected everything for pedestrians and bicyclists. So I wanted to just kind of go back in time a little bit and show you how long that we've been working in this area. So we had what we called a summit with those six entities. We had three of those in 2018. And then if you remember, we had EPA provide us with some funding to do a workshop that just focused on the Sinclair site. And then we kicked off the larger plan by having an advisory group meeting, visioning workshop, and then similar to the Sinclair site design workshop, we did one for the whole area in July. So that visioning workshop that we had in June, a couple pictures there from attendees, and then the map on the right was part of the geographic mapping exercise, and I'll focus a little bit on that in a couple slides. We did our SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and challenges. You can see a couple things that were mentioned by the attendees there, strengths and weaknesses, opportunities and challenges. And then the geographic mapping exercise. So each table was given the same map, and they were told to put on there what they thought, you know, from a vision standpoint, what they would like to see, maybe some things they wouldn't like to see. And so for this particular one, they were focusing on housing and public amenities. You see some of the things that they brought up, trails, boutique hotel, Lot 44 development, down in Check Village, housing around the Greenway Park. And then in July, that three-day workshop, again, some images. And then I'll go through these. So they started off on day one, and they had the different concepts. On the left, you'll see what the consultant drew up, and then on the right, you'll see some red and green dots. Those are stickers that people applied based on what they liked and did not like. One thing I'll point out too, you might see right here, you might notice there's something missing in this area. It's covered up by new development. So part of this is a concept. So what the consultant was doing is sometimes he would throw something out there that kind of the test and give people's impressions. So what's missing is that stone warehouse. So the feedback was very clear. They knew that. They weren't suggesting that we should do that, but they just kind of wanted to make sure that they were on the right track. And without a doubt, the public did not want to see that gone. Day two, so taking all the information from day one and then focusing again on those same areas. And then the last night, this is what was shown to the public. We will be sharing a cleaned up version based on that feedback later at an open house. But this is the whole area based on all the feedback since we started this in the spring. So next steps, we're gonna have an open house in October, and then following that up with City Planning Commission, and then back to City Council in November or December. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Oops, thanks, Sam. Yeah, sure.
I just wanted to thank everybody for their efforts on this. I know it's been a long, arduous process, but I think the result we can already see is really great in the neighborhood. This is just, selfishly, this is just what I'm hoping for 33rd and 6th Street at some point in time. So, okay, thank you for your efforts.
Marty?
Do we have an inventory of city-owned properties in this district to see what would be able for development or developers? Thanks.
Just a couple of comments. I'm just thrilled to see this. One of the comments I would have is, and I think I mentioned this before, is I like the trolley loop. Moving people not only between that district but between our downtown and Kingston Village and a great big loop. I like that idea. Access to the river, I think, is extremely important. A good housing mix in that area. I think Jennifer, you taught me heads and beds, in terms of putting people in rooftops, drive commerce. And, so as we were looking at redeveloping the Ellis area and continue to look at redeveloping the Ellis area, you always said, make sure we've got rooftops because those people go to school and they purchase services, et cetera, et cetera. And so what was the feedback on housing down in that area? Adam, was there some understanding of the importance of some sustainable housing down there?
Yes, there was, I think, for some people have maybe forgotten what this area looked like in early 2008, and that was all filled with homes in Czech Village. And so looking at reintroducing housing that's similar along C Street that would match the south side of C Street, but then introducing more denser rural homes, things of that nature, to try to get that housing number back up, which then allows you to hopefully attract other things which people have said they want, like a small grocery store, things of that nature.
Right. Exactly my point. Thank you. Well, thank you very much. So do we have a date set for that October?
It's being confirmed as we speak.
Okay. You'll let council know.
Yes. Said. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate the update.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sam. Okay. Now we can get to the river recreation feasibility study. Sylvia, you're up again.
So this is an update on a river recreation feasibility study that we put out an RFP earlier this summer to find a consultant to do the study of the river. The main goal of this is to determine what's the best river recreation option for Cedar Rapids. So the consultant will be analyzing the river conditions, including hydrology, water volumes, flow, and also looking at both the dams, the 5-in-1 dam along with the Lowhead Dam further south. They'll also be looking at economic impact assessment and taking into consideration the flood control system and the Greenway Parks planning that's already been done. So the consultant will come up with several conceptual design alternatives for feasible river recreation options. which they will take to the public and get some input. And then once the final design is selected, they'll come up with more in-depth maps and graphics for that alternative. And they'll also produce a final report that includes a phasing plan and some order of magnitude cost estimates for the selected design. So we got a handful of responses to the RFP and have reviewed them internally and interviewed a few candidates. And following that, we have a recommendation, so that will come to council on September 10th. We'll work to execute the contract, and then this project is expected to take 9 months to a year. They'd be happy to answer any questions about this project.
Thank you, Marty.
I'm not sure if this is within this scope of work or not, but at some point in time, a while ago before I was on council, there was a concept plan of the bike trail to run along the east side of the river towards Usher's Ridge, or Usher's Ferry and Seminole Valley. I'm just curious if that plan is still alive or sitting on a shelf somewhere. I'm hearing from people in my district that live out in that area that would be really nice to have a quick jaunt to Edmund Road that's safe, that's not on 42nd and up and down the hills of the Seminole Valley Road. So just curious if that's part of the scope. I'm probably sure it's not, but I'd really like to kind of dust off that plan and see if it's something that we can take a look at now that we're going to run the bike trail across the river. So it'd be nice to kind of have that on some kind of a five-year plan or just kind of take a look at it. It would be bad to drive, bring it all the way down to Shaver Park, but that's you know, pie in the sky stuff. But.
Yeah, and that's a really good point because, again, the scope really does focus on the river, but they are looking at the Greenway, they're looking at connectivity and kind of how people are accessing the river. So those types of things would come up. And again, I think I am not certain offhand where that proposal is at in the trails plan or in phasing of it. So we can check on that and report back on that specific piece of it. But I would say through this process, those types of connections will definitely be looked at.
Yeah, absolutely. Along with other trails projects, and you know, they're focusing on the river itself, but they're also going to be looking at, like I mentioned, the Greenways Parks plan, and just other things on land that impact how people experience the river.
I just had a question as far as how are we coordinating this assessment with the Cedar Rapids Parks Foundation?
So they will definitely be looking at plans that are already going on for kayak launches and any other, I guess, existing recreation amenities. They'll definitely be doing a lot of outreach to groups. So.
Well, just a couple comments, really. I like that, you know, the fact that we put so much time and effort after the flood into the Greenway planning process and making sure that those are being connected and with the flood control system and how it impacts the river and that kind of compatibility, I think, is important. After the flood, we heard an awful lot about dredging. You know, if you just dredged the river, then we wouldn't have a flood anymore. Well, we knew that according to the Army Corps of Engineers, that probably really would not have impacted any of the levels of the river and given us much relief at all in a flood event. However, as a boater, dredging the river is a great idea, because I was telling Jennifer the other day, when we had our boat out on the river, you basically had about a mile you could go and that was it. So above the 5 and 1 and then just basically underneath the Edgewood Bridge, and that was it. And it's very hard to get up around Seminole or even up any farther than that with any size boat. So, you know, I'm glad they're looking at that, and hopefully is dredging an option for recreational purposes, and what would that cost us? I can't imagine it would be inexpensive. And then the other thing that Jennifer and I talked about, I'm glad they're looking at the roller dam down by south of the city, because I think as we look at kayaking, I'm really concerned about the safety of that dam, and that's just gives me shudders to think about people utilizing that section of the river and not having that particular dam addressed. I think we have to do that. So I'll look forward to hearing what they say about that. And then the 5-in-1, is the 5-in-1 dam and any kind of recreational opportunity? For example, we had talked at one point about a kayak course, perhaps, you know, starting up here and going down, utilizing a portion of the 5-in-1. Is that also being looked at?
Yeah, yep, that's definitely within their scope. So kind of looking at what was proposed in the Greenways and different ideas in the past and kind of getting a bit more technical background on, you know, what are the most feasible options.
I'm really excited about this because we've been talking about it. As Jennifer and I talked the other day, we've been talking about this for years. We've got all these great ideas, but we, at this point, really don't know what's feasible and what we can do. So I'm looking forward to this. As Councilwoman Van already said, as a river rat, I really want
to self-describe.
Yeah, self-described river rat. I'm really looking forward to this report. So what was the timeline in about, you said nine months to a year?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, Sylvia.
Thanks.
Okay, with that, we're open for public comment, if anybody would like to speak. No public comment? Okay. At this point, any future discussion items, Council? Marty?
Yes. I just want to know, since I see Parks Director Scott Hulk in the back, can we get an update on Hughes Park? Just for the next, I mean, it doesn't have to be today, but yeah. Just for the next meeting.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
I can give you one quick now if you want one.
No, it's not on the agenda, but I don't want to break any rules.
All right. With that, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, Council. Thank you, City Team. Good job, as always. We appreciate you.